Hey, everybody. Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I'm a stand-up comedian, the host of the aforementioned podcast. And alongside me in our state-of-the-art recording studio above Public Square Coffee in downtown La Mesa, California, is my lovely wife, my co-host, and my best friend, Melissa Ruth Nickerson. Andy Lara is here as well.
Hey,
Mel,
there.
I'm not even going to make fun of your jacket because I love it.
Well, thank you.
I love this jacket. It's giving very 80s. If it were yellow, it would be straight April O'Neil.
It's a bit like Princess Diana. A bit.
Oh, did she rock some of those? Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah.
She did
it's
a lot
tapered
of...
tapered wrists.
Yeah.
That's really pulling it together.
Literally. Yeah. It looks cool.
An ode to Diana.
Yeah.
This jacket is.
You look awesome.
Ready cool. for anything.
Yeah. You could. This could be sporty.
Could fly a plane. I could fix an engine. You know, I could
walk a runway.
I could change a pipe out.
Most likely what you're gonna do is go to a track meet.
I'm gonna go to a track meet.
Are you gonna wear this to the track meet tonight?
I don't know.
So tonight is our son's senior night, and we're gonna talk about that a lot. We have comedian Brad Upton on the podcast today, which I'm very excited to talk to Brad. Brad's a guy that I've known a lot about, and I've seen his clips and stuff, and we have a lot of crossovers.
Yes.
Northwest, stand-up comedian, track and field, even though I'm not in it, but we're...
Athlete and coach.
Athlete and coach type situation.
Yeah.
But I've never actually talked to him that I remember. I'm very forgetful, so he might be like, remember that time we hung out?
You guys have a date. Together.
We're doing the Kentucky Comedy Festival in the fall. I think it's called the Kentucky. Can you scroll down on that, buddy? We are both a part of there it is. Yeah, the Kentucky Comedy Festival
in
Murray, Kentucky on October 3rd.
So you are going to meet him if you haven't met him.
Yeah. And I'm excited to talk to him about it, but one of our things tonight or so tonight our son is having his final track meet at his high school.
Yeah.
So senior
night. This is like, they didn't have this when we were growing up, you know?
At least at our schools.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
now,
I dropped out of high school by senior year, so I wouldn't know, but.
Well, in the early 2000s, I was unaware that they did senior nights.
Yeah.
But now every sport does one.
Yeah.
At high school.
Which is good because it's good for parents to have a few more commitments in the spring.
They're like, hey, show up to the track at 3.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say on that, and that also ready to be photographed potentially.
You're on the field.
You're on the field.
Mm-hmm.
These are going to be some pictures that you're going to look at for the rest of your life with you and your. So be photo ready at 3. Really think through your outfit, and you're going to be there till 9.
Don't wear some dumb jacket.
No. Don't wear something that will age poorly over decades of photos.
The cinched wrist.
Yeah.
I won't wear it.
Yeah. I like why.
No, I'm just.
You're
I'm
the only.
That's a great jacket.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Okay.
It's not school colors. I'll probably wear something school colors.
I'm going to dress up as the mascot. I'm going to be full.
A Highlander?
I'm going to be a Scotty. And not in like a head costume situation, a face paint scenario.
Nice. Don't have like an old like 420 shirt that's like the STP logo.
You're
gonna
just have some weed paraphernalia shirt on. They're like, dude, this is your son's senior night. There is always sometimes when you see the parents of athletes, you're like, oh, okay. I can see where that came from. And other times you're like, wow, that one did fall from the tree. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
That
fall and ran.
Yeah. That's crazy. Oh, tell them about the tattoo. Mel's doing the weekend recap. So Mel has been, the last 2 weekends, been at track meets, volleyball matches, but
tournaments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you saw quite a tattoo.
Yeah. 2 weekends ago, I was at a distance carnival event, which is just 800 miles and 2 miles.
So just the distance runners.
Mm-hmm.
Two laps and more. None of the None of the flashy sprints.
No hurdles.
No hurdles.
ASICS distance yeah. carnival.
And there was some emotional hurdles.
This is very niche.
Yeah.
There
in
was
Irvine,
like
Irvine, of course. They're always everything's in Irvine.
There's like 24 miles. Like they ran the mile like 24 times.
Yeah,
for the different various
heats,
paces and heats. But I saw a track mom in running shorts, and then she had a Roadrunner tattoo that went from front of thigh to back of thigh. All black. You know, it was tasteful.
Yeah.
Just one color.
Did you walk by and go, beep, beep?
I don't think it was the...
It wasn't the Looney Tunes one.
No, it was just...
An actual Roadrunner. She was like, my husband's got the coyote.
Yeah. It sounds like, size-wise, it was almost to scale. You're like, is that real-life Roadrunner?
My only guess is that she was a runner.
Yeah.
You know, like a mid to long distance runner.
Sure.
And she thought that was cool.
Listen.
You know, when she was young.
It was her nickname.
Yeah.
She got it. And I mean, I could have gotten the Energizer Bunny tattooed on my leg.
Oh, because that's what you were called.
That's what I got called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were small.
Thinking about that one.
Yeah. And
no,
pink.
I'm kidding. No, I got that one in middle school in PE.
You got that, your. Tattoo.
The Energizer Bunny.
You got your Energizer Bunny tattoo? You guys would be surprised
to
know where it is.
Yeah, pinned that out.
You guys would be bottom of foot. It was very painful.
Got super infected.
Yeah. Not a practical area to get a tattoo.
Especially for a runner.
Heavy usage. Very hard to keep that clean.
It's half there. I'm still going.
Yeah.
What movie or show does somebody have an infected tattoo?
Oh.
It's just something.
Yeah. That's your type of humor.
Yeah. Though. I think that's so funny.
You love an infection or like someone getting sick?
Or animal.
Animals. You
just
love an
time.
Animal gag mm-hmm. so much.
Yeah.
You love in... You love in Tommy Boy and Planes, Trains when the deer gets involved, or you love
like a raccoon
hitting someone's face. You've never not laughed at that.
It's like my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dog in Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Oh yeah. Give him the glove.
Stealing the glove. That's I like cry.
Yeah.
Every time that part of the movie comes
Well, I think
yeah.
one of your favorite parts of Love on the Spectrum is when they cut to the animals.
I giggle.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah, because I'm like, oh, but also I laugh because you're like.
It shows you
the
how.
Cuts are,
it's a funny cutaway. It's
the
great.
Cuts are
they
funny.
Use it all like, the time.
I know.
The dog will be like.
So good.
They'll say something a little sad and the dog will be like.
Mm. Yeah. Totally. So like, good. Wow. Was there one guy who was like, all right, so you got to get animal B-roll. That's
yeah.
your job.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
I mean,
you're on the dog. One of them has a dog that keeps getting in weird positions.
Yeah.
He's like feet on the ground, legs on the couch.
We've watched three episodes and we're starting to be pretty amazed with like the cinematography. Like,
it's a great show.
Like, they
watch it.
They rent out these venues and like these mansions.
Yeah.
And it's so pretty and it's sunset. And then they do all these like cuts of like, the bee and the wildflowers. Yeah. And it's like, so it's
a couple of
fun.
Them. I've been like, wow. I mean, it seems like Netflix just reserved the whole venue for them. They're at like the zoo by themselves. Yeah. You're like, that's awesome. Yeah.
But it's hard to not like be amazed at like their budget.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think like, one totally. Of the, there's so many compelling things about Love on the Spectrum, and one of the most compelling things about it is Love on the Spectrum just answers the question of what if people were honest in relationships?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what a lot of what you're watching. Mm-hmm. If you're like, what if just people said what they wanted, how they felt, and it's like, you know, you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
You can do that?
It's amazing, but like I'm sure if you like are online dating and stuff,
yeah,
Like, it's got to be, like, cathartic to see just modern-day struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just everyone feels that.
Yeah.
Who's on those apps and stuff. But then these people have other struggles that they bring to the table. So, but it's just, like, so pure-hearted.
Yeah, I mean, I love probably what you love the most about it, too. I mean, I can't say what you love the most, but you see the parents who are just in it.
Yeah.
And the emotions that they have and their interactions, you know.
And they try and give advice.
Yeah. And James is like, you're getting stressed out by the micromanaging.
Yes.
It's great. It's wonderful.
It's so sweet and hilarious.
Yeah. You're invested. So what, are you all caught up on the show? Or were you?
No, I think like 4 episodes into this last season.
Maybe 4. Season 3?
Yeah.
Okay, and we're like 3 episodes into the first season.
Oh, okay. We're on the most recent season.
Yeah,
for sure.
But stick with it.
We're very late.
You guys love it?
We're very late.
It's great.
Tell me what you love about it.
I mean, like what you said, I think the pure-heartedness of it, and it just feels like, especially, you know, when you're a parent to a person like with a disability, it's like you're watching it with like this sense of like, oh my gosh, like they're going to get to experience all these things that we know. And to your point, it is like this magic of being like, oh, look, like this isn't the weirdest conversation in a relationship you'd ever seen.
Right.
It's like, it's actually, we all kind of hope or wish that it was like this straightforward, this honest, this pure. And then it's also wild. Like you'll get into season 3 and like some of the antics and interests of just some of these people are like so wild.
Yeah.
Like that's incredible. And you're rooting for them because like I really hope they find someone who loves that about them as much as they love it.
Yeah,
you know, the just like you'd be rooting for anyone else. Like
yeah,
that, you know, and so
yeah,
but then some of the aspirations are so wonderful, and you're like, oh man, like that guy, like I want to hang out with that guy.
Yeah,
like I want to be with someone who likes and is passionate about something that much.
Yeah,
because sometimes some people are just not that fun. You're boring.
It's true, it does such a wonderful job of just highlighting them as humans. Like hearing James talk about how much he loves the Renaissance Fair and his swords and why he does need a double-edged sword and now he wants to get a flamethrower.
I ran so fast to follow that guy on Instagram.
Yeah.
I was like, where is he? I want to be in his life every day.
Yeah. It's great. It's great awareness, visibility, and it's every once in a while you watch a show and you're like, is this helping society? I think this actually might be moving society in a more compassionate direction forward, which is great. You know, you hear the one girl share the story of, you know, that she's on a date and shares her diagnosis and the guy stands up and leaves.
Yeah.
And you're like, and the friend was trying to be like, well, maybe you should share it. And then she tells that story and you're like, well, yeah, not everyone's as open-minded as you.
Right.
And that's a world that you have to live in when you have a diagnosis like that. Yeah. So
I think it's possible that some viewers could gain some more empathy for like what it's like to, you know, have a child or to be that person.
I mean, it's like the top show on Netflix every time a new season comes out and it's only getting bigger in like socials and stuff. So I think it's more than possible because I'll see them on TikTok and people are celebrating them.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and I don't think it's in some pity way. No, I think it's in like people are starting to see like the value of them as individuals. And I think it's a beautiful thing, you know.
Didn't Jack Black surprise on a talk
on
show?
On Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's great. I love it so much.
Yeah.
So
it's fun.
Well, we have a guest today. Brad Upton. Brad is, I mentioned earlier, a very funny comedian. He has a couple great dry bar specials. He's got a couple dates coming up. One, I'm doing the festival with him in Kentucky. There's another one, too, that I don't remember. But I'm sure he'll mention it. Check out his stuff online, follow him online, and enjoy this episode with Brad Upton. Brad, can you hear us?
Dustin, I cannot hear you. Let's figure out what we're doing. Can you hear me? Shake your head, wave. Yeah, okay, all right. That's good. Let me see.
Can you hear us now?
Can you hear
still hear me?
Check.
Shake your head. Yes, you can hear me.
Yep.
But you can't hear us?
What am I missing here? Do you know? Well, maybe I just got to turn it up. Oh, wait a minute.
Is that it?
Hello?
Oh,
yay!
Oh, man. It was the volume button.
You got it.
Oh, man. It was the volume button.
Are you doing a scene on us, Brad? Are you trying to...
I had everything.
Man. You really played into stereotypes there, Brad.
Boomer.
With a boomer. You
know, you're on a zoomer.
You badmouth us millennials to your 90 million views.
And I turned it off and I turned it back on. I thought, oh, that'll fix it.
And then we try and do one zoom with you, Brad, and you can't get the volume up.
I had everything.
Enjoy those dry bar checks. Bad mouth in my pathetic generation.
Fair enough.
That was
point
great.
One millennials.
Yeah, that's all we're good at, unfortunately. Apparently. Hey, good to officially, I think this is the first time we've met, right?
I don't know how we've met, because when you first, all of a sudden you were everywhere on the internet and on Instagram, and I go, Seattle comic. I go, Seattle comic. Wait. What?
Right.
How do I not know this guy?
So I was never based in Seattle. I'm just from there.
Where are you based out of?
San Diego. It's where I've always been.
I see.
Or comedy-wise, yeah.
But did you grow up here?
Yeah, so I grew up in Federal Way. Big words, Pasco. Yeah. Big words from the Tri-Cities. I won't take any of that slander.
All right.
Not even the nice of the Tri-Cities. Not even the best of the three.
Actually, I'm a Richland boy.
Oh, you're a rich. Oh, now there you go. Well,
the nice one of the three.
The nicest. Well, we have some Tri-Cities content we're going to get to here in a bit.
Yes.
But so
and then I went to high school in Tacoma. Yeah.
Which one?
Stadium.
Oh, beautiful. Harry Potter High School.
Yeah. That's yeah. Right. And we met through like church youth group, and then got married when she was at SPU, and then I went to UW, and then so I spent my first 27 years up there, and we dinked around in the kind of the all of the King County area there for a while, and then we moved to San Diego like 14, 15 years ago, and that's when I started stand up
because
I was doing job transition type, what do I want to do with my life. And it was kind of helpful to be totally anonymous in a new city and be like, always wanted to try this. So I was 27 when I first started, married with two kids, and just showed up at open mic. So you know the open mic scene. It's always strange when you're just like a full adult man there.
Yeah, I didn't start till I was 28.
Oh, I love that.
Wow, same time.
Mm-hmm. And same, I mean, what year
same
is that? What were the open mics looking like? And was this at like at the underground and stuff?
Yeah, it was Comedy Underground, and there was one open mic. So that's all there was. And there were about 15 comics in town.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the scene was very different when I started. There are hundreds of open micers.
Oh, yeah.
And even that term, open micer, probably didn't exist. You guys were just the comics in Seattle, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. We were just the comics. Once you started doing open mic, you were a comic.
Yeah. Who was that? Like Fox was there probably, right? Because he was running the club.
Yeah, he was based out of Seattle, but yeah, the underground was his. I mean, he was based out of the Bay Area, but the club was his. Yeah, absolutely.
Was there anybody I would know who was in that Seattle 15 that you were in?
Well, you know who I always tell people this, you know who I started with at the exact same time was Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, that's the coolest name that anyone could. I mean, I started with Taylor Tomlinson. That's cool. But
that's a pretty good one.
You got Bill Nye? I didn't know he did stand up.
Isn't he a Canadian?
No.
No, he's not. He's a Northwest
he's not
guy.
Canadian.
Okay. All right.
But he came out after he graduated from college. He came out to Seattle. He's working as an engineer for Boeing. And he started doing some open mics. And I thought he was hysterical, but he was so smart. The crowd would just, he would bomb because his references were just, and he'd get angry because they didn't understand what he was doing. And I was laughing. I didn't even understand the references. But he was so smart. And he was hanging around doing the open mics. And then he started on Almost Live. And the rest is history.
Yeah, that's
right.
I actually forgot that he went Almost Live before. And I should know that as a Seattle 90s kid. But I forgot that was his original kind of entry into entertainment, totally, right?
Was totally. Yeah, that's where Bill Nye, the Science Guy, began, was on Almost Live.
Wow.
And in all of our third grade classrooms for the rest
across
of time.
America.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's great. I had no idea.
See, and growing up in schools in, you know, south of Seattle, they never told us. See, I thought, I mean, they weren't like, this is your guy.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you that. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
They just turned the videos on.
They probably didn't even know. Were any of those other Almost Live guys around in this scene for you? You know, like the Joel McHales and stuff who...
Ross Schaefer was around already doing stand-up at the time.
Yeah.
And Keister was doing a little bit of stand-up at the time, but mm-hmm. they just went immediately right over, moved over, started their sketch comedy show, and none of them... Well, Ross has always been a stand-up, and John has done some stand-up, but right. they all went to that show, migrated right over to that show, and that was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great. Mm-hmm. As far as comedy origin stories, that's a fantastic one. Just yeah. so unique mm-hmm. and different than the majority of what we got. So, well, I appreciate you hopping on, and I'm glad we could officially meet.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is funny that even, you know, as guys from the Northwest who do stand-up and clean stand-up, it is funny we haven't been at some event, some corporate, some... thing together.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. I am surprised but that we have never crossed paths.
But we have one. We have one coming up.
You guys got a date.
We mm-hmm. we're both doing the Kentucky Comedy Festival.
Oh yay. I hope we're there. I mean, but that thing can be on a couple of different weekends.
Yeah.
So.
I requested to not meet you there, actually. Oh. I said, "What do you got, Brad?"
I'll come if Brad's not there.
Exactly. different date.
And earlier, staying late just yeah. to make sure I meet you.
I prefer virtual with you. Is what
All
I'm
right.
saying.
Fair enough.
Let me ask you this. So we want to talk some track and field. In addition to some other things, our son, Melissa, was a collegiate runner. She ran at Stadium. She was a state runner. She's a distance runner. And our son
ran at Pasco.
Invite.
Yeah.
Well, so we would come for a state cross country.
Oh yeah, yeah. On the golf course, Sun mm-hmm. Willows.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Dustin went.
I was so excited to for this episode to because I texted Andy and Mel on our little group. I was like, Mel, we're doing a track and field episode. I don't know if anybody will listen.
Yeah, this is niche.
Very niche.
But we have a very funny comic. And, you know, we talk about family stuff, and track and field has been really our life since our son started it 3 or 4 years ago. And tonight's his senior night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At his high school. And it looks like he's going to run at the next level. But you know, regardless, it's a very emotional night, but we always joke that Tri-Cities. Yeah. The version of it here is Orange County, where it's like, just that's where the tournaments are.
Yeah, they've got the hotels. It's affordable-ish.
What do you got? Soccer, baseball, track. It's all going to Tri-Cities.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Tri-Cities kind of does that now because they get better weather, and then, you know, they've got really nice facilities, so they attract all the sports.
Yeah.
Cheap hotels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're built for it. They've got the chain restaurants, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
The parking lots. Yeah. So we used to have a state track in Tacoma. That was nice. The foray was at, I believe, is Lincoln High School. They had
You guys, I don't think you're that old to go back to Lincoln Bowl.
Well,
so
I
graduated in
2002.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been about.
So was that the end of it? They don't go there anymore?
Yeah, might have been. When it was at Lincoln Bowl. Yes.
Yeah. And, okay.
3A and 4A were together in the Lincoln Bowl.
Okay.
And now all 2A, 3A, 4A are all together in down in Tacoma at Mount Tahoma High School every year.
So that might have been it, because again, I just probably forgot. But I do remember enjoying. I could always go to the track state. I couldn't always get to Pasco. You know,
and you were a distance runner.
And I was an individual runner. So I would always run against Bellarmine and mm-hmm. Gig Harbor, and they had teams.
Right.
You know, so they were at this fancy invites. They traveled, and then I was just a solo act. Yeah.
A solo standout.
I was solo on the line.
And then they take the top the top two teams, I think, from your district, and then the top 15 individuals.
Yep.
That way the good kids, the good individuals that aren't on a good team still get to go to state and compete.
That was me. Yep. When I can make it. Yeah. Now,
Dustin, did you run?
No. So I played baseball all growing up. And
I wrestled a bit,
but mm-hmm. I didn't have the focus to be a runner.
In high school, I went out for baseball in ninth grade and I got cut and went out. Then I went out for track.
It's a yeah.
Sophomore year, I went out for baseball and got cut and then went out for track. And then I saw a pattern. And then my junior and senior year, I went out for track.
Yeah. It's a tale as old as time.
Uh-huh.
Yes, exactly. I'm good at this one. I want to be good at baseball.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any interest in track, but by third year I went, okay, I guess I'm pretty good at this one.
I like winning.
Yeah. Well, your dad.
I'd rather be a baseball player.
Yeah. Your dad, who is a distance runner and ran at the Air Force Academy, he always joked that running was the sport of last resort. You know, and because a lot of sports are running plus another skill.
Yeah. Right.
But then you start to get to those high levels. Mm-hmm. So track slander, I get it. But I understand where it comes from.
Having not known the sport.
Now that I'm immersed in it,
yeah.
I was working on this. I don't know if this is a bit, but I've been thinking about this idea. Like, I've been watching distance runners on and off now because I watched you when you were in high school and I went to your meets and I go and I'll watch like all the time now with our son. The JV girls last place finisher is running like a 7 minute mile, seven and a half, 8 minute mile.
Sure.
95% of adults cannot do that.
No, absolutely.
And I think the gap between your standard adult and the lowest performer of that sport is greater in track than in most sports.
Yeah, you might be right.
Like if you were to look, like if you take your standard adult man who played a little bit of basketball and you put him on a JV girls basketball team, he's probably going to be a bit of a standout, you know,
because
the skills translate a little more. I'm telling you, man, like you'll see sometimes this kid, like I'll watch my son's track meet and he'll win or get second to an incredible time. And then you'll see this kid and you almost feel bad for him because he got last place and you're like, he's just not as good. And you look down and it says like 504.
Right, right.
And you're like, this kid, no adult does this. No one can just clock a 504 mile.
504 is a very fast mile.
If you saw someone doing a 504 on a treadmill, it'd look like it's a full sprint.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You'd get kicked out of the gym for making a racket.
Slow it down. Yeah.
You know what? In college, my sophomore year in college, I bet the distance runners that I could break 5 minutes in a mile.
Yeah.
And they said, there's no way. Because I thought that's 75 seconds a quarter. That's just crawling.
Yeah.
That's crawling.
Yeah.
And they bet me in an indoor meet in Whitworth on a 12 lap to a mile track. A little tiny.
Yep.
And I ran a mile indoors and I ran 5:10.
Yeah.
And I was dead.
Yeah.
It was the worst thing I'd ever done in my life. My lungs were burnt. I couldn't believe it. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Well, I would make
you
the
don't
same,
know until you know.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I would make the same argument though for most track and field events about the difference between those athletes at the high school level and most adults, including hurdles. Because hurdles look. Mel won't watch the hurdles. They make her hurdles and anxiety don't go well together.
I clap when they get up. That is so impressive.
And people watch the hurdles the same reason they watch race cars. They want to see a wreck. That's true. I think people want to see, they watch that race and go, oh, this could go really bad. Let's watch this.
The relays too. You know, with 4x1, 4x2, those handoffs.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you know, just fractions of a second.
Well, it looks so simple, you know. Too. You're like, how hard is that? Handing that stick off. Yeah, try it at full speed.
Stay in your lane. Yeah. Get all the steps down. I mean, also, pole vault. The pole vault is quite a sight.
Yeah. Pole vault scares you. So even being around track and field your whole life, you're still a little nervous around the pole vault.
Pole vault, that can go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People have been killed in the pole vault. Nobody's ever been killed in the hurdles.
Not yet.
Yeah.
You see the kids messing around in the high jump pit. You're like, could you guys stop? Like,
yeah.
I'm too old. I can't watch this.
Like, you're so right about the hurdles, though. Like, why people watch. Because I've been watching hurdles for 20 years, and I've never once told a story of who won the race.
Right.
But I've told some stories about some tumbles.
Yeah.
When they
I had a couple epic crashes.
Yeah?
Always
expand. Let me ask you this. What's the most you fell? Have you, like, because that's the hardest one to watch when they fall or they hit everyone. Because sometimes when they trip on
it's
the first one.
Like the third to last or the second to last, like, because you're tired. Yeah. That's my guess.
Give us your horror stories. I want to hear some horror stories.
I ran the 400 meter hurdles in when I was in my junior year in Montana at Bozeman. And we were running against Bozeman, and we had a freshman that I had never beat before. And I was just mad that I had never beat a freshman. I was a junior and I had not beat this guy. And so I was in first place coming to the 10th hurdle. And he still hadn't come past me. And I was like, oh, this is my day. I'm going to finally win. And I didn't get my lead leg over the hurdle. And I don't know if you know anything about the 400 meter hurdles. It is hard to get off the ground on the 10th hurdle. It is hard to leave Earth.
Yeah.
And I've told people in the 400 meter hurdles, the first five hurdles, you're a gazelle. And the last two hurdles, you're a water buffalo. Because it is... It's hard to get off the ground. And I hit that hurdle and I just pancaked face down, crashed. Everybody went past me and I just laid there on the track so long. They literally put down the hurdles for the girls' races afterwards. So I was still sitting on the track. They went around, they put down all hurdles on the whole track. And then they were getting ready to start the women's race. And they came over and said, can you get up and get off the track? Because we have to run the women's track. Because I sat there so long because I was so upset and I was tired and I was just angry that I just ate it. And he set the stadium record that day. That was my crack. And then I'll tell you my other one, indoors at Eastern Washington, I had a new girlfriend and I had told her all fall, all winter, how good I was in the hurdles, right? That I'm a big fast hurdler guy. So she came to the first indoor meet of the year. And I don't know what happened to this day. It was me and two guys from WSU and a guy from Idaho. And coming off the first or second hurdle, all of a sudden I went into the infield and I went down under the scorer's table. And I just crashed into these chairs and this, because indoors, everything's compact. Everything's close to the track. And I went under, I just had an epic crash. And that was the first time she'd ever seen me race, right? After I'd been telling her how good I was.
Yeah.
And she was in the infield with her camera. And I got up and I made eye contact with her. And I'm not kidding you. She turned her eyes away like she didn't want to make eye contact with me. And I was just like, oh, I was livid. I was just like, I was so upset. But you know what I did? I went back to the starting line. I was in the first heat, the fast heat. And then I went back and then I said, can I run again in the slow heat against the decathletes? Because I didn't want to go home and think about it all night.
Right.
Yeah.
I wanted to get right back on the horse and ride. I wanted to get right back in the race again.
Yeah.
So they let me run and they didn't count my time, but I wanted to get right back in there and race because I had never eaten it like that in my life. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. That's like comedy.
Wow.
When you bomb.
Yes.
Please just let me get back on stage. Just let me get back on stage because you're only as good as your last set.
Now,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, did you ever try the steeplechase?
Oh, God, no.
Because it is a hurdle, but then you got the water.
That hurdle doesn't fall down. That hurdle weighs 180 pounds.
Yeah, you'll just run into it.
That's a 4x4. It doesn't go anywhere. No.
I look at those on the track sometimes. Full.
You know what though? I learned some lessons in track that helped me in comedy.
Yeah.
And when
I very first started doing comedy, I was in a bunch of competitions. And I realized when you're running hurdles, you're standing there, you're looking down at the line, and there's 10 hurdles in front of you. Yes, you're racing other people. They're on both sides of you. But really what you have to do is you have to execute these 10 hurdles. That's the most important thing.
Yep.
Yes, I'm racing, but I have to clear these hurdles. And I realized in a comedy competition, if you've ever been a competition, all these guys around, they're all messing with their heads and everybody's worrying about everybody else. No, you only can worry about yourself. I have to deliver my set. And so when I first started doing comedy competitions, I was like, this is just like running hurdles. Mm-hmm. I can't worry about anything else other than what I can control, and I have to deliver my set. So it helped me, actually.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's not just comedy competitions. I mean, that's comedy in general and honestly, life, right? Like,
right.
You really can't control how they're going to do, you know?
Shut
up and race, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's super interesting. I know a lot of my sons kind of on the line, his competition will be like, oh, I'm tired. I raced earlier. You know, like they're coming up with reasons why they're not going to win, you know, mm-hmm. like even though they're seated number one.
Right.
Well,
he told one of them, like, dude, have some confidence.
Yeah.
You know,
I wonder, I mean, the strategy.
It's excuses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The strategy of distance might be slightly different than some of those shorter races, though, in that with distance, there is so much pacing.
Right.
There is like your competition, how fast they go out does sometimes affect you.
It affects everyone.
You know, but you do have to, even more so kind of to your point, though, you're like, you do have to just run your race, though, you know, and not go out too fast and get gassed, you know. We have our son is, he's a fast runner and he does best when he pushes the pace, but he's not known for like a great kick, which means when he's running, you're hoping he doesn't get caught. And that is a very anxious way of watching your child race.
Oh yeah.
I can imagine. Cause no matter what, especially when he runs the 800, you're just like, you see a big lead and you're like, I can't watch this last 200 because even if he wins still, that second place is going to get close to him.
Yeah.
There's just different types of runners, like the ones that can push it like about 75% into the race, and then the ones that just save it for like the last 5%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's he run? 800, 1500?
He runs the 8 and the 1600.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, and then he does the 2 mile. He doesn't do it often, though.
He does cross country.
In cross country, yeah.
In the fall. So
I remember so many times when I was at track practice watching the distance runners and just going, oh, I'm so glad I'm fast.
Yeah,
just be running these repeat 400s, and I'm like, oh god,
it's tough.
My son says that the 400 might be the hardest race because it's a constant sprint.
I don't know. What if you put some hurdles in there too, and your new girlfriend in the field with a camera?
400 hurdles and 800 are always what people think are the hardest.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I don't know, something about the lactic acid he was saying in the 400 versus.
All lactic acid, just bad. It's a horrible, horrible feeling. As you know, when you're just trying to, you can't go any faster and your legs are just dying.
You're
awful.
You're living I have that dream where you're trying as hard as you can to move faster, but you can't. And that's what you guys do twice a week.
That's lactic acid in your dream. That's exactly what it feels like.
Yep.
That's crazy.
There's like a snake chasing you and you can't get away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Well, but you've remained, you still coach it, right? You're up at Shorecrest. Right.
I'm going this afternoon. Yeah, I'm going to track practice this afternoon.
I mean, what led from, you competed obviously at a high level, the shift from like watching or participating yourself into coaching, there had to be some part of you that's just like, I want to still be around this world and I want to teach kids to love and appreciate it. Or tell me what you love about coaching.
Well, when I got out of college, I felt like I still hadn't run my fastest, and I was teaching school. So I had access to a track and I had access to a weight room, right?
Right.
I had the keys to the weight room and I had the track. So I competed the next year independent. I ran unattached, And then I ran unattached the next year and the next year, and I ran till I was 34 years old. I competed in college. I competed in college meets against college athletes till I was 34 years old. And at the same time I was coaching. In fact, the first 6 years I was a stand-up, I was still competing in the hurdles.
And, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I ran till I was 34. I ran my fastest time in my life when I was 30. And
our son's coach he's still a pro runner. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he PR'd like 3 weeks ago. He's like 30.
Yeah, 31 and a distance runner. Absolutely, mm-hmm. You can do that.
That's great. So you're running, coaching, doing comedy.
Yeah. And then I showed up when I first left the Tri-Cities to do stand-up full time. I moved over to Seattle and I went to the University of Washington to work out indoors. And the coach at the University of Washington, there you go. I also coached at SPU besides Washington.
Oh, how about that?
Nice. There we
coached go. In both mm-hmm. those schools. I just started the coach. I would come into UW indoors and I would hurdle before the UW got there. And then the coach would come out and he said, hey, you want to help my guys? Because he didn't, to be honest with you, he didn't know, he wasn't a very good hurdle coach. I said, sure. So I started helping the UW hurdlers. And then I was there for 11 years. I coached the hurdlers at the University of Washington for 11 years.
That's
and
amazing.
In that time, I quit competing. And I just, whenever I was not on the road, I was at track practice. So I told them, I'll be here every day that I'm in town. But I travel a lot. So when I'm not here, I'm not here. Mm-hmm. And then I did that for 11 years. And then I coached 1 year at SPU. They contacted me and asked me to coach the 400 meter hurdlers because SPU has that weird track. You know, it's not an oval.
Nope.
So the 400 meter hurdlers had to compete, had to train on a high school track. So I would meet them once a week and we'd work out. But I told them I travel too much. I can't keep doing this. And then, about 2007, I stuck my nose in Shorecrest High School track practice one day. And the guy goes, hey, I need a hurdle coach. I go, look, I travel all the time. I can't do it full time. He goes, I'll take you when I can get you. So I've been there 17 years now.
Wow.
That's awesome.
It's still been the way I do it. I love doing it.
I mean, you're certainly a specialist.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely. With the hurdles and stuff. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing.
Go ahead.
I would feel confident in track coaching almost anything, but yeah. That's all I want to do is coach the hurdlers.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Javelin.
I could coach javelin.
Yeah.
My two roommates in college were both big time javelin throwers. So they'd stand there all in the living room all day talking javelin.
That's awesome.
Wow. You are just Mr. Track.
Yeah.
That's amazing. No, that's amazing.
We talked about being a niche.
Yeah. Mr. PNW Track.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, when you texted me and said, we're going to do a track episode, I was like, yes.
Yeah. So she was the same way.
Yeah.
Did your kids run at all?
No, my daughter played volleyball and my son was a swimmer. They were both pretty good at it, but neither one of them had any interest.
Well, just for our son, it was the same thing. Freshman football, flag football, all through middle school.
Baseball, wrestling.
And then his freshman year, I picked him up from like weight training in the spring and I took him to the track and I said, just watch like 3 races with me.
Yeah.
And we just stood in the back of the stadium and I said, you would be on varsity.
Yeah.
And he's like, varsity? Like he's playing freshman sports.
Right.
And I was like, no, you would be on varsity.
Mm-hmm.
And so then no training all summer. We're like, if you run cross country, you get a new pair of AirPods.
We literally bribed him
because
we knew. And it also his freshman year, he was 90 pounds. And so he went out for football and you're like, it doesn't. You know, everybody has like the Cooper Kupp story, you know, another Northwest icon. And they're like, he was, you know, like 120 pounds or 110 pounds his freshman year. And you're like, that was still 20, 30 pounds heavier than Joel. Like, and by the way, Cooper Kupp grew. He's still a normal, like a normal size football. He's a small football player, but he's a big human. And he went out, we bribed him because we're like, hey, you're naturally going to be good at this. And then what? Yeah. He was the number one runner by the end of cross country season.
Oh, that's great.
So your kids went a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is great. Yeah.
I didn't want to push them into it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, it was gradual for Joel. Even we were just joking about his sophomore year before, you know, league championships, him and his friend were eating like sour gummy bears. You know, like they just didn't know anything yet.
Yeah. Well, you could probably speak to this a little bit, the difference of high school and college. Like, so Joel's getting some recruitment right now. We've had a couple meetings and that, and, you know, trips and stuff. And when we were at San Jose State, the coach started talking about like the nutrition plan for the athletes. And it didn't even, you know, I'm just looking at my 17-year-old boy who just eats candy all the time and right. sweets
and whatever. 1,000 calories an hour.
Exactly. Yeah. And it didn't even land on him. Like, I brought it up later in the car, like, your coach is going to tell you what you can and can't eat and when you can and can't eat it. And he's just like, huh? Like, that shift from high school to college is immense, you know, the way that they're thinking about. I imagine you don't have the Shorecrest kids on a dietary plan.
No, but I've seen them in the stands before a race eating crap, and I'm like, hey, that, nah. Do that after your race. You know, I was gonna tell you, when I was at the University of Washington, I was 3 years. I was a full time assistant, and I was also the recruiting coordinator. So if you got questions awesome. To ask me about recruiting,
wow. That's amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's usually not always the head coach that like handles all the recruiting. Yeah. It's the assistant. So well, that's awesome. Yeah,
and you've been, and it's your first time going through that process. And it's the coach's mm-hmm. thousandth time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when we finish this episode, if you could stay on for 5, 10, I have a million questions that our listeners do not want to hear.
Episode now.
Yes.
This is too niche.
Yeah. This is a little too. So I did feel for my son a little bit because, you know, Joel, he grew up, you know, like a lot of sons do, cheering for the teams that their dad does, and so he's been a UW fan, and we went to the Sugar Bowl last year, and it was great, and UW's provided some quality entertainment, and he had in his mind, like, he's like, gosh, it would be so great to run at UW, and I was like, yeah, unfortunately, they became the best distance school in the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and all of their recruits out of high school are sub 4 already, so I'm sorry, son.
Yeah.
I have no connections.
Right.
That one's that one might not be on the table. But, well, let me ask you a couple more questions to get maybe a little off of track and field. I mean, they're a
little less niche.
There, you know, I mean, I could do this stuff all day. I like it a lot. But I wanted to ask you 2 questions. I wanted because you got a new knee and you got and a fairly new married daughter, right?
That is correct. Here, yeah. Let me see if I can.
Oh, here we go. Mel loves a good knee scar.
Look at that.
What was
Was that your lead leg or your back leg?
My trail leg.
Okay.
Yep.
Was this from years of hurdling?
Yeah. You know, I told you I competed till I was 34 years old. When I was 17, I got part of that cartilage taken out of that knee. And then I competed 17 more years on that knee with only a little bit of cartilage in it. And that was not a good long-term plan.
No. How's the new knee feeling though?
It's still sore. I'm almost limp free. So okay. I'm getting pretty close.
How much road are you doing? Because I've heard you don't have a lot of dates up right now and you took some time out, but then I saw a poster not far back that you did have a bunch of days. How much road are you doing these days?
Right. I took off a bunch now, and I have a couple dates next week, and I have one in May, and then I'm just, there's more. I have some family stuff going on that I just said, look, I can't go out for a couple of months.
Right.
Yeah, I'll start back up. I'll get my reps back in. I'll probably go back out late June, early July.
Okay.
And work real hard, but.
What are the dates coming up? I know we've mentioned the Kentucky Comedy Festival. That's in October. Lots of planning out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. I have, you know, I know you can usually plug dates and stuff. I got very little to plug. I think it's 10th. I'm in Salt Lake City. That's going to be one of my first.
Wise guys, yeah?
Nice.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, congrats on the new knee. I hope it...
I still have some buyer's remorse.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody says, oh, you'll be so glad you had it done. I go, well, when does that happen?
Gosh.
Right now, I'm 6-7 weeks out. I'm like, maybe I could have had a few more cortisone shots.
Yeah, this is what my dad said, remember?
This is so tough. Yeah.
I don't remember what number knee my dad's on, but there's been various body part replacements.
Well, you know, I also have an athlete's mindset of that I was going to recover like a 25-year-old athlete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be over this in about 2 weeks, and it's not the ace.
Well, tell us. So we have a kind of an emotional night ahead of us, Sun Senior Night. We don't know what it's gonna. We don't know what it's gonna feel like. We've been. I mean,
we have to walk on the field in between him.
Mel's been. Mel's been crying at non-senior nights already this year. As far as
I don't know. We don't know if we're just gonna just smile and hold it together or not.
Yeah,
we don't know.
But you just had a big, I mean, it was a couple months ago. Tell us about the wedding, the emotions of all that.
Yeah, my daughter got married, and, you know, there's pictures. We had a photographer, and, you know, my wife and I walked her down the aisle, and every picture, I'm just going. I'm just fighting tears so badly. My face is, I'm just fighting not to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a good look.
Okay.
So there's no good pictures.
Shove it down.
Oh, I was so, it was awful. But it was a beautiful wedding. It was outdoors, you know, in Seattle in August, and you couldn't have asked for a better day. It was beautiful. The thing went off flawlessly.
That's great.
It was really, really a great event.
When does the, when your kids are grown now, the emotions we've noticed as our, you know, as we're about to, you know.
Launch our first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really... It hits you unexpected. We've realized like just times you're, you just get sad all of a sudden.
Well, my son turned 31 2 days ago and it made me sad. It made me cry almost like, wow, that's my little boy.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's my little boy. He's 31.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed with teenagers, you'll, I don't know if you remember this, but you'll go from that emotion to, they'll do something that's like, you need to get out of my house. Like 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
Like it can go from crying to anger pretty fast.
Well, he still works with teenagers.
I know, that's true. Yeah, yeah, you're in it. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. I like those kids. I really do like those kids.
Yeah.
The track kids are different. You know, those kids that come out for track are a pretty good group of kids.
They are. Do you ever make your hurdlers run like sprint races, like the 400?
Oh, yeah. They got to run sprint races. I try and get them
four by four.
You got to run the 4x4.
Our hurdle coach, my son's team, all those hurdlers, they have to sprint too. They don't get to just do hurdles.
No. Well, sprinting's so much easier.
Yeah, no hurdles.
Yeah, they're like, wait, there's nothing in my way?
Oh, when I was competing, oh boy, run an open 200, this will be fun.
Yeah.
No thinking involved.
Yeah, I mean, hurdles are much more of a better metaphor for life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so tough with all the steps and stuff. I'm not that coordinated at all. So.
Did you ever run a steeple?
No, I didn't. No. Mm-mm. I couldn't have done it.
Too much anxiety. You're like,
no,
oh, yeah.
I wasn't anxious in high school and college, but no.
No interest in that.
Yeah.
Doris didn't make you?
I know.
Doris,
I
my
Doris,
gosh. I was
going to bring up Doris.
College coach.
I,
you know Doris, of course.
Doris and Ken, I know them both. I knew Ken. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. I didn't last too long in college running. I just didn't want to devote my life to it. But I enjoyed it. But yeah, Doris took us all over Seattle. You know, we went to Camp Casey.
Yep.
We ran the Bluff. I think it's EB's Bluff on the beach. Doris was, I think she, I mean, is, I think she has, she had like ADD. Like she was just like, good morning, squirrel. Like she just loves life and running like with such a passion.
Yeah.
There's a documentary about her. Have you seen it?
I haven't. No, I should watch it.
Are you aware of it, or do you?
Recently, I was talking to a friend, and I Googled Doris and then I saw that there had been a documentary made.
Yeah,
yeah, I got to check that out.
Yeah,
she's a remarkable woman for sure. Yeah.
Well, Brad, I appreciate you hopping on. It's been a lot of fun meeting with you, chatting. You know, thank your wife
Absolutely.
For turning up the volume.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great to meet you. I'm sure we'll see you
nice
around.
Nice to meet you too. I hope I get to San Diego one of these times.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be up in Seattle a couple times in the fall.
In the fall. Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll cross paths with you then.
Yeah, let me know. If I'm in town, I'll come hang out.
Be great.
All right. And I'll say, if nothing else.
Unless you don't want me to.
No, no, I'm happy to. And if nothing else, I'll see you in October in Kentucky.
All right.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Stay on. I got some recruitment questions for you.
All right.
We'll okay. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Hey, everybody. Want to give a special thanks to our Essential as Oils patrons. That's our $25 a month and up. Thank you so much for contributing to the podcast. First off is Adam Bush.
Avril Griffiths.
Allison Nelson.
Andy and Darlene Gerton.
Avery Starr.
Bonnie Galindo.
Brandon Schoenberger.
Carrie Teague.
Christopher and Bridget Finland.
Code to Grow.
Courtney Eibling.
Dam Aris Diaz Stevens.
Daniel Owens.
Dave and Melissa Koch.
Dave Hoagland.
Dustin Daly.
Jason and Francis White.
Jen Thirk.
Jessica Hanrahan.
Jonathan Rivera.
Jordan Cowan.
Juliana Smith.
Lori Amos.
Lauren and Nick Rachel.
Matt and Sam Slazdom.
Michelle Caslon.
Nicole Carraz.
Nick Cordell.
Norman Perrin. Sorry, Norman.
Preston and Rachel Wilson.
Rachel Kennedy.
Raina Camps.
Robert and Nellie Capen.
Scott Elliott.
Stephen Menya. And Tiffany Payne. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.